This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We're locked and loaded on a Thursday edition of the Lombardi Line alongside Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you. Jam-packed 2 hours ahead. Preseason week 2 kicks off tonight in the NFL. Lots of injury and contract news. It's also a no way, no doubt day. We've got storm warning. The final half hour of the program, one and only Mike Palm from right here at Circa Resort and Casino. He's going to join us on set for the final half hour. Get Palm's pressing three. Mike Somich as well on the docket. VSiN host of The Handle. He's coming up later on this hour. Get some of his best plays for the day and the weekend, some NFL futures he has interest in. It's a great day to have a great day. Michael, how are you today?
I am great, and it is a great day. We have NFL preseason weekend, probably the biggest preseason weekend. We know next weekend there'll be very limited veterans playing. It'll be more of the younger guys, so hopefully we'll get to see some young players and the veterans play this weekend. So, you know, it's also a great time to keep track of these injuries that have accumulated over the last couple of days, which have affected some teams significantly.
No question about it. We'll get into a lot of those injuries. The big news, though, I want to start off with today has to do with a contract situation. Patriots have traded Pro Bowl pass rusher Matthew Judon to the Falcons for a 2025 third round pick. We talked yesterday late in the show about some trade interest potentially around Matthew Judon, but he ultimately finds a landing spot in a place in Atlanta that we talked a lot, especially around the draft when Atlanta decided to draft Michael Penix Jr. with that number 8 overall pick instead of taking one of those highly touted pass rushers. This is a desperate need in Atlanta. So what do you think about the fit Matthew Judon leaving to go to Atlanta?
Well, they say they're not going to retouch the contract, okay, which I don't understand because Judon wanted a new deal. But I think New England has come to realize after 2 weeks of training camp that this isn't going to be a very good year. It could go from bad to worse quickly. And Judon, you know, to get rid of him to pick up a third round pick. Now, here's the question. If you're like me and think Super Bowl winning GM Terry Fontenot is going to have a mediocre season, then that pick could be in the 70s. But if you are optimistic and think it could be a high pick, then that pick could be, you know, in the late third round, which is not really a valuable thing. They didn't redo the contract. So for Atlanta, they don't extend them. They're just doing it for 1 year. To me, it seems a little bit like they were able to get a need, but I think they need more than just him. Calais Campbell's a good player. They just let him walk out the door. And that to me was really, I think if they had Campbell and Judon, it would be a lot better look.
Well, I was joking with producer Elliot Bowman before the show. I was like, can you name another Falcons pass rusher? And he was like, oh yeah, Calais Campbell's gone. No one can. So now it's Matthew Judon. That's the guy. This is a team that ranked 32nd of 32 in pass rush win rate last year over the course of the last 3 years. They have fewer sacks than anybody else. So he'll certainly be important, but they don't have anybody else to free him up either. The money part is really interesting, though, to me, Michael, as you referenced. If they're not, like, do you think they're not going to touch this at all? Because you said it, like, that was a big sticking point with the Patriots. He's playing on a $6.5 million deal this year, and he didn't want that.
No, they claim they're not touching it. I think they have to touch it, you know, but he's reported. Now, one thing about Judon, he's a good player. He loves football. He plays hard, but don't lie to him. Don't tell him you're going to do something and don't do it. This is a team for as much success as Super Bowl winning GM Terry Fontenot's had over his career. This is a team that has a high cap rate without a lot of wins, 21 wins over the last 3 seasons, which is all Arthur Smith's fault. That's why they blame him for that. So it'll be fascinating. Look, Atlanta, here's what we know about Atlanta. They're not an explosive offense. Kyle Pitts has got a knee injury. Drake London's a possession receiver. Bijan's really good. Kirk Cousins will help. But will they be able to play for – they're not – their 2 biggest plays last year were screen passes. Jonnu Smith, who's no longer with the team, and Bijan Robinson on a wheel route. So this is not an explosive offense. Can they play from in front, and can they win these close games? Are they going to be tough enough? I mean, Judon's going to go down there, and it's not going to be nothing like his experience in New England when Coach Belichick was there.
Falcons, high expectations for them nonetheless, minus 130 favorites in the NFC South, despite not having been to the playoffs in the last 7 years and a 7-win season a year ago. So trying to make positive change in that end. But I want to talk about the Patriots side of this as well, because is this a team now that making a move like this feels like, okay, we're just accepting our fate. We're hanging it up. We know we're going to be terrible. Rebuild, retool, yeah. Get the 32-year-old. I think today might be his 32nd birthday, but get the 32-year-old older veteran who's coming off of an injury out of here and just accept our fate.
Yeah, I think the cold water that has gotten thrown on the New England Patriots' face happened in Philadelphia when they saw how far away they were from being a good team. I mean, 3 years ago, Mac Jones's rookie year, I watched practice against the Eagles and the Patriots. That was the year the Patriots went to the playoffs, and they were the better team in those practices. That's not the case. 3 years has taken a huge toll on this New England team, and I think they have come to realize that, A, you know, they don't have Mac Jones anymore. Drake May's not ready. We'll see if he plays. Femi thinks he's going to play three series tonight. Mm. I'm saying, why doesn't he play three quarters? But we'll see. Quarterbacking, offensive line's a mess, right? And now their two best defensive players, Barmore and Judon, will not be in the front seven. That weakens them. And then you take away the head coach who was a defensive specialist in Bill Belichick. How good are they going to be? I think they are going to be the survivor pick of a lot of weeks.
Yeah. I agree. And I think that's a good point that last year the defense was kind of the shining light of what was an otherwise really, really brutal, hard to watch season. This year, season win total set at 4.5. The game tonight against the Eagles, preseason week 2 kicking off in Foxborough, Patriots laying 3. Initially, they were a 2.5-point dog, but we've seen a huge flip that way, -115 to the 3 as well. So that ticking closer to the 3.5, total 35. We'll discuss this game as well as all of the lineup in week 2 of the preseason coming up in the next segment. But for now, let's keep it in the division because you also mentioned off the top, we got some injuries to keep track of. Right before we came on air, we found out that Bills linebacker Matt Milano suffered a torn bicep, is going to be out indefinitely. He was such a loss when he went down last year for the Buffalo Bills defense. A big reason why people have optimism at all about Buffalo's defense this year was that he was coming back healthy. How significant is this for the Bills?
Well, this is huge for the Bills. I mean, let's be clear. I mean, Milano sets the defense, but what makes this harder for the Bills is communication, okay? Sean McDermott's defense has to communicate. He needs a middle linebacker who talks, okay? He needs a middle linebacker who can get everybody lined up. But when he does it, and he also needs two young safeties that can get it done too. So now we've lost High, we've lost Poyer, and we've lost Milano in this defense. The middle of the defense is going to be really challenged. This is a tough injury, but look, this is what Buffalo wants. They like small players. They want to play a nickel defense. They want to play fast. Great. It's wonderful in theory, Stormy. The problem is football's a big game, and there's a place for the little man in football. It's just not in front of the big man, and Milano has been hurt, and when they don't have Milano, they're not the same team.
Yeah, nobody thinks Von Miller's about to step up in his absence and really take over now, are they?
Von Miller didn't even make a tackle last year. Stormy, Von Miller didn't even make a tackle last year. So they got to count on Bernard to be the guy. And who else is going to be behind him? You know, last year they brought A.J. Klein back. Watch the Kansas City game. Kansas City went right after A.J. Klein. It just didn't work. I mean, this is a defense that needs to play from in front, that needs to rush the passer, even though they don't have great rushers. Rosario, they re-signed. Espinosa is one of their better rushers. Von Miller was non-existent.
Season win total for the Buffalo Bills, 9.5, +140 to miss the playoffs, -175 to make, and +180 favorites there in the division. The Cowboys, Michael, got a deal done Wednesday. Nope, not CeeDee Lamb, not Micah Parsons, not Dak Prescott. We'll still wait. But they did sign free agent former Jets defensive end Carl Lawson. Also made a rare interdivision trade with the Giants for reserve defensive tackle Jordan Phillips in exchange for a late round pick in 2026. What do those moves tell you about Dallas right now?
Well, forget the players. What it tells you is Dallas is not happy with their defensive front, and they shouldn't be. I mean, Mazie Smith was bad last year, right? He was not very good. They've lost Hankins. You know, they lost Gallimore. They lost the kid who went to the Washington Commanders team. You know, so they've lost three of their depth players. They couldn't play the run last year. So they're trying to get Phillips, who, according to our friend Pat Leonard, wasn't even going to make the Giants team, which you've got to worry a little bit there. They need him to come in there and give them some size and some substance. I'm sure Mike Zimmer's not happy at all with Mazie Smith. I've watched him play last year. That wasn't good enough, right? They're too much on the edge. Mike wants physical guys to take guys down the middle and see if he can handle it. This run defense, if they don't play in front, people are going to run the football on him effectively.
This Lawson, by the way, 29 years old, he had a pretty good season 2 years ago. 7 sacks, 33 tackles.
Then he gets hurt.
He gets hurt. And last year, he was even a healthy scratch in more than a handful of games, too.
Never came back. Right. Exactly, Stormy. So what happens to him is he has good year, then he gets hurt. Good year gets hurt. You know, this has been going on for him since Auburn. That's why he was a third round pick. As a freshman at Auburn, he was sensational, got hurt. Then he kind of lost his way a little bit. That's why he was a third round pick.
Also, Jerry Jones speaking out again on the Dallas Cowboys contract situations. When asked about CeeDee Lamb via ESPN yesterday, he said that they are conscientiously working toward a deal for CeeDee. So we just continue to get these, as I said about the Brandon Ayuk situation, these non-update updates on these contracts, Michael.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, just tell us when it's done. You know, I mean, you know, just tell us when it's going to be over with. I think, look, I have no doubt, and I wrote about this for a column, I have no doubt that CeeDee Lamb will be a Cowboy on opening day when they go to Cleveland. I don't doubt that at all. I do not believe Prescott will get done. I don't believe Parsons will get done. I know Parsons is playing because he knows he will get done. Mm-hmm. But the reality here is Jerry doesn't want to hand out cash for that bad game against Green Bay.
Yeah, and that's a great reminder as well. Michael has a full breakdown of this situation up live on vsin.com right now, talking all things Cowboys and the concept of when around Jerry Jones and this Dallas team. We're going to hit the break. When we come back, talking all things preseason week 2, we'll preview the game tonight and the betting angles, as well as all of the lineup updates you need this weekend.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
All right, we got who's in, who's out, line moves to be aware of as we kick off preseason week 2 tonight. One game today, none tomorrow. We got a full slate on Saturday and then 2 preseason games in week 2 on Sunday. But to reference the game we discussed already briefly in the opening segment, the Patriots are a 3-point favorite against the Eagles tonight, total 35.5. The Pats opened as 2.5-point dogs, so we've seen a significant move in their favor this week. Also saw a 2-point move on the total from 33.5 to that 35, or now 34.5. So I guess we're shifting back and forth. And this is the thing about preseason lines, Michael, to keep in mind, as we've referenced, you know, all of last weekend. Now these lines move quickly when people jump on a number.
Yeah, no question that, because there's so little people betting, the amount of bets are down and it moves the line. It isn't, nobody's really related to sharp money. Nobody has tighter information. I mean, I think the reason the line moved was because Nick Sirianni came out and said he's not playing his guys. Everything about line movement is who you're playing, right? I think that's one of the things I've learned in doing this for 5 years at VSiN. It's line movement. And what Adam Burke, we had on yesterday, Stormy, talked about, which was really good, is that this line movement last year worked. Line movement this year is not working.
No doubt about it. The stat that Adam Burke put out this past week was that closing lines that had moved 1.5 points or more were 1-9 ATS last week. So should you follow the seam or fade it in week 2? We'll have to wait and see. But you said it. Nick Sirianni has largely said Jalen Hurts, these primary starters, are not going to play. That's why all of the reports that have come out of Patriots-Eagles joint practices this past week, that the Eagles have been dominating those practices, don't really have an impact on this game. You know, Jerod Mayo, as a new head coach, trying to work out this quarterback room and get reps for guys, are going to be invested in trying to win probably a little bit more here. And the expectation, as you mentioned, is that we might see a little bit more Drake May after just seeing 2 of 3 for 19 yards last week. Hopefully gets him some extended looks.
I would think they would have to, Stormy, because here, let's play out a scenario a little bit here. We know their offensive line isn't very good. Now, Jacoby Brissett's a big man, and he's a tough kid. But can we play? Can you think he can play 17? At some point, May's going to get called from the bullpen.
Yeah.
And if you don't give him reps to play, where the reps are at least meaningful in terms of a game where you have competition and everything's going, then it's very challenging. You just don't know, you know, what you have with May. And look, they're scared to show him, because I think he hasn't looked good. I think they're disappointed. I think they're scared to have that negative feedback come out on him.
It was Bailey Zappi who got most of the reps in preseason week one. He went 12 of 20, 108 yards, sacked twice. Joe Milton got a little time as well, 4 of 6, 54 yards, one touchdown, and no picks. Nick Sirianni, by the way, is head coach of the Eagles. They're 2-6 in the NFL's preseason games. Like you said, he doesn't play a lot of his players. Last week when they beat the Ravens, it was kind of a the Ravens gave up the game more than the Eagles won it. So just keep that in mind tonight as well. Also, coming up this weekend, the Browns are a 5-point favorite against the Vikings, total 36.5. Vikings have not been good in the preseason in terms of wins and losses, according to our own Steve Mackinnon. 1-11 straight up, 3-8 ATS, their last 12. With the Vikings, though, Michael, their injuries just keep on coming. I feel terrible for them. J.J. McCarthy, obviously, he's lost for the season with the torn meniscus. We learned that news yesterday. Wide receiver Jordan Addison was carted off the practice field yesterday, although Kevin O'Connell did say he thinks he's going to be okay. It was a scary situation, at least at first blush. Whenever somebody's carted off the field, it's not usually a good omen. And rookie wide receiver Thayer Thomas also left practice with a hard hit. So some injuries kind of mounting up for this Vikings team.
Yeah, I mean, that's the scary part. And here's what you don't want to have happen if you're Kevin O'Connell. You don't want to have Darnold not play well in the preseason. I think they got to script it for success. Last week, they played their young, they played their starters. Darnold looked very good. Couldn't convert a 4th-and-2 in the red area, but he looked good. He looked quick-minded, and he looked, he had some timing. I think we're too hard on Darnold. I understand this, and I know the betting community makes this point, and it's well taken. He's the worst quarterback against the spread, I think, in the last 8 years in terms of his win percentage. So understanding that, I mean, you get that. But I think he's got a good coach. I think Aaron Jones is going to help this team, and their offensive line is very good. Look, they've invested in an offensive line. They got 2 number 1s, 2 number 2s, and a 6th-round pick in their offensive line. They put their money where their mouth is. This isn't a bad team. I'm not sure we're going to see the team when they play Cleveland.
Yeah, you mentioned the ATS numbers not having been good. Sam Darnold also the completion percentage, 4th worst among the 60 quarterbacks with 500-plus attempts since 2018. Also, QBR of 42 in that time, the worst among the 26 quarterbacks to make 50-plus starts. So he's had a lot of things that have not looked good on the field. But if there is a coach and a situation that can make a guy look better and improve and see what he really has left, it's probably Kevin O'Connell in this group. Head coach O'Connell did talk to media this week as well. After the announcement came through that J.J. McCarthy officially was done for his rookie season, he had this to say on what he's learned about J.J. since the draft and how he feels for the young man.
I'm the most crushed for J.J., but as our fans either have already come to find out or will in the future, this guy is so motivated and so dialed in. As excited as I was to draft him, he's confirmed everything that I hope to see. Not only early on through training camp, through his performance last Saturday, but he should, you know, our fan base and everyone should just be, you know, excited about the fact that we've got our young franchise quarterback, I believe, in the building.
That was a strong statement there that he closed on.
Yeah, no question. And I mean, look, the kid's a hard worker. He's everything you want. I mean, he's what they said at Michigan. He's won a national championship. He overcame adversity and losing a game to TCU, came back from that. I mean, this is kind of what you want and what your leader. And I don't think the plan, Stormy, has gone off track because he's hurt. The plan was always for Darnold to be the starter. I know that JJ played well in the week one preseason game, but that wasn't the plan. The plan was for him to play Sam Darnold and go from there and build a team around that. So it's going to be interesting to see how this all works out.
Yep, brought Sam over this year as kind of that bridge quarterback, 1 year, $10 million deal. The Vikings against the Browns. Browns now laying 4.5, so slightly down from that 5. Again, the total 36.5. Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs, a 7-point favorite against the Lions coming up this weekend, total 39. And I say Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs because apparently he's going to play at least a half in this game, Michael.
Yeah, I mean, Andy Reid plays his guys in preseason. You know, he won't play in week 3. We know that. He'll play all his backups. But Andy Reid takes summer football seriously. You know, look, yesterday, you know, that when they, you know, they lost the left tackle Morris, they put the rookie in there. You know, they feel like, okay, the receiver, they could get hurt. They might have to miss a couple games, but he's going to bounce back. You know, Rashid Rice, we don't know where he is in terms of that. Hollywood Brown, that we mentioned, isn't as bad as they said it was. Mm-hmm. But Andy doesn't really, that doesn't deter Andy. Andy's talking about, how do I get my team ready? How do I play the best football?
The Chiefs opened as a 3.5-point favorite, but with that news moving up to 7, interesting note from Steve Mackinnon again. He's got an article up at VSiN.com right now. He's going to do these each and every week. Going back to 2010, 13 teams that have laid 7 or more in the preseason, they're 4-9 against the spread. So those big favorites have not been particularly successful. The Broncos also a 7-point favorite against the Packers in week 2, total 39. You think Bo Nix can follow up his great early week performance with another one?
I do. I think Bo Nix is scripted for success. I think Sean knows that part of his job is to make sure Bo Nix looks good. And I think Bo Nix will look good. I think he'll make sure that he looks good. And I think he'll continue to look good.
How about Russell Wilson, who's back at Steelers practice this week? The Pittsburgh Steelers, a 4.5-point favorite this week against the Bills. That totals up from 33.5 to 36. Should he play this week against the Bills? He told reporters he feels ahead of schedule.
Yeah, I would still wait. I think to me, it's like, even though you're ahead of schedule, I think you have to wait on these situations. Okay. I think to me, I know there's some guys need to play, some guys don't.
Yeah. We also talked about how we think we would like to see a little bit more Drake May. Whether they elect to do that or not, it would be great. I personally would like to see a little Bryce Young here with the Carolina Panthers.
Yes,
he was held
too.
Out. He was held out of the preseason opener. Do you think that we see him in week 2? Yay or nay?
We should. We have to. I mean, they paid all this money for an offensive line. What are we saving it for? Like, what are we saving it for? Like, let's see what we have. I mean, this is a funny team, Carolina. They're 2-15. They signed everybody back. They're as tight to the cap as any team. They like their team, even though their team hasn't been very good.
It's true. The Jets laying 1 at the Panthers here, week 2, total 31.5. Really, really low on that one. We will also see Daniel Jones make his return for the New York Giants against the Texans this week. And we will officially have an answer on the quarterback battle in Vegas. Will it be Aiden O'Connell or Gardner Minshew? Okay, final word. Who ultimately do you think wins the job out the gate?
I think Minshew wins it. Okay. I do. Although I think O'Connell has endeared himself to Antonio Pierce, but I think Minshew will start the game off because I think they'll want that veteran presence. That's just a guess though, because I think neither of them have looked good enough.
AP does have like that. It feels like an affinity or
soft
a loyalty.
Spot.
Yes, whatever it is for Aiden O'Connell. But if you are correct in Gardner Minshew, he is the favorite right now, -125 to be the week 1 starter for the Raiders. Aiden O'Connell, -105. We're going to hit the break here. When we come back, VSiN Zone, Mike Somich, professional handicapper, host of The Handle here on VSiN. He's going to join us, get some of his preseason week 2 thoughts and an NFL futures update. Don't go anywhere. This is the Lombardi Line on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We're rolling along on this Thursday edition of the Lombardi Line. Preseason week 2 in the NFL kicks off later on this evening. But what you might not realize, and if you need to run to the counter, get your app ready, is we've also got some horse racing plays for you today. Compliments of the one and only Mike Somich, who joins us now on the Progressive Guest Line. VSiN, host of The Handle, professional handicapper. You can follow him on X at SamaBomb18. And you dropped a SamaBomb last week on the program that cashed in show. Let's hear what you got today, Mike. We're excited.
Yeah, you got to love a little instant gratification. Took a horse last week, 7-2. The horse went gate to wire. Just we were looking for cash about 5 minutes after the segment ended. Got a little bit more time. Got about 20 minutes to post here for Saratoga, race number 2. And it's a really unique situation. So in horse racing, if you've got the same owner, same trainer, you'll see entries. So in the second race at Saratoga, there is a 2, a 2B, and a 2X. So if you bet on the 2 horse, you get 3 chances to win. Sounds like a great deal, right? It's a terrible one in horse racing because rarely do you actually like all 3 horses. And in this case, you're seeing the 2 horse get way over bet because you get 3 chances to win. So we're going to go against the entry here. Let's go to horse number 7, Chess Master, returning back down to the claiming level. 1-for-2 at this track, has run 37 times at this sprint distance. 14 of those came back winners. We're getting a 3-to-1 price right now, which should really be like 2-to-1. But because of the entry and all the money it's taken, we're getting a better price on the 7 Chess Master. So Saratoga, race number 2, got about, let's see, live update here, 18 minutes to post. We're going to go with the number 7 Chess Master.
And when you say he's a claiming horse, educate me as a non-horse bettor. Not that I'm a bettor, period, but I don't live in the world you live in. So that means when it's a claiming horse, was the horse run? Somebody could put an offer in and buy the horse. How's that work?
Yeah, exactly, Michael. You could text Bill Parcells right now, who I'm sure is up at Saratoga. Tell him
I'm going to text him right now. I will. I'm going to do it right now. I'm going to tell him to bet this. What horse am I telling him to bet here?
Saratoga, race number 2, number 7, Chessmaster. I would not recommend he claims it. You could buy Chessmaster for $32,000. So I wouldn't recommend you drop the claim ticket in there and pay for him. But yeah, claiming level means that anyone can go out and purchase that horse. Then there's allowance level, which means they're not purchasable. And then stakes level, which is the best of the best. So this is the lowest tier of racing. And it means that you generally get horses that are successful at this level, but then will kind of move up and not be as good. Chessmaster won at Saratoga in a $32,000 level claiming race last year. He's running a company where he cannot be claimed the last two races, and now we're dropping back into that claiming level. So getting a little bit easier foes. It's like taking on the number 2s or number 3s in preseason versus having to face the starters on the defensive side.
There you go, Mike. I like it. There you go.
Beautiful. Chessmaster. I'm more of a Queen's Gambit gal myself, but there we go.
I like that. Stormy, when's that coming back? I love that show. What are they holding back on?
I thought it was just a one and done, but it was brilliant. I love that show so much.
It needs to go more. We need more of her. That was excellent. Yes, let's I tell you what. It was great. You know, just like tonight's game, do the segue for you, Stormy. Tonight, Mike,
I'm losing my job here, Samit.
Patriots? You're going to bet the Patriots in the preseason after what you've heard and read about at their experience at the Eagles?
I wish we could cut back to last week when you made fun of me for betting the Patriots, Michael. And they covered. They won last week. They got the job done. I mean, look,
my sincere apologies to you.
Their ones may not be very good. They might not be very good against ones, but in preseason, it's all about the quarterbacks and who is going to play in these games. You mentioned the line shift. We saw the Eagles open as 2.5-point favorites. This market's all the way out to Patriots -3. If I was going to bet somebody, it would be the Patriots -3 in this spot. And a big reason, we knew Jalen Hurts wouldn't play. But it sounds like Kenny Pickett not going to go either, which means that this is going to be a Tanner McGee and Will Greer game for Philadelphia. I'm not a big fan of those guys. On the Patriots side, you get Brissett. You're going to get Drake May. Then you're going to get Bailey Zappe, all legitimate quarterbacks in the preseason. And then that fourth quarterback is going to be Joe Milton. And Joe Milton has DTR vibes to me, right? Someone who is going to tear up defenses in the preseason. He's got a big arm. He can move the football with his legs, and he's going to get to face the third or fourth string defense consistently in these games. All of those reasons lead me toward the Patriots, even though they have a massive devoid of talent when you look at the ones. The deeper parts of this roster actually stack up well against Philadelphia. I'm going to go to a double result. I'm going to go New England Patriots win first half, win the game, +120. So I need them to be ahead at halftime and to win the game. And if that happens, I get +20 instead of -170 for the money line or lay in the 3 points, which has moved quite a bit. So give me the Patriots double result tonight.
Yeah, the Patriots initially opened, they're getting 2.5 points. But now for a lot of the reasons that you have laid out, they're a 3-point favorite in that spot. So you're in a position where you're getting that plus money, honey. I also loved what you mentioned about Joe Milton, because he is such a low pressure workout warrior type of player. He will light it up, make you think he is amazing. But if this was a regular season game, absolutely not. Fade in that kid 100%. But in this setting, I think it works out pretty nicely for that quarterback room. Another game you have interest in, the Raiders opened a 3.5-point favorite against the Cowboys, got bet as high as 7. We're seeing 6.5 now, total 39.5. This is an important game for Vegas as they are determining after this week, according to head coach Antonio Pierce, who that starting quarterback is going to be.
Yes, they are. And that means we're going to get a lot of both of Aiden O'Connell and Minshew. And that, to me, is the key here. You're getting two quarterbacks who are above average preseason quarterbacks. You could even say average regular season quarterbacks here. And that means that you're going to get a lot of opportunities against the Cowboy defense that really feasted off turnovers last week. They lost to the Rams 13-12. They had 4 interceptions that game, only put up 12 points. Trey Lance is going to play a ton again in this game for the Cowboys. Look, I mean, he kind of stinks. Like, I was expecting more out of him. I thought we'd see more, especially against the weaker defenses and 2s and 3s. And he just wasn't very good. I think that experiment has kind of run its course there down in Dallas. I'm happy to lay the 6.5 for the Raiders here, who I think jump out early and just end up stomping this Cowboys team. You're not going to get 4 turnovers this week if you're Dallas. And you're going to get 2 quarterbacks who are absolutely dialed into play because they are playing for a starting job. So I'll lay the 6.5 here with the Raiders.
Yeah, I can't argue with you here. I think the Cowboys are in transition. What's your thoughts on the Cowboys win total?
I'm a Cowboys under guy. I mean, I took the Eagles to win the division when they were the second choice in the division, not the favorite. this is a Cowboys team which has relied on turnovers for 2 years on the defensive side of the ball. We'll see if they're able to do that again. The locker room seems like it's a mess. You've got Jerry Jones coming out and just talking nonsense about CeeDee Lamb, and he's replying to him on social media. That's never good. Dak doesn't have a contract. The running back room is an absolute mess. Like, I've got way more questions than answers on this Dallas team. So it's under for pass or pass for me here. And if you want to get frisky here, Dallas to miss the playoffs, plus 170. I don't hate that.
I tried to talk Michael into an alt under 8.5 yesterday, but he wasn't having it. Just trying to have a little fun.
Although I thought about that for a while, though, Stormy. I got to be honest with you. I think that might be the right play based on what I'm hearing. Yes.
So funny. Okay, so I know you do not have a bet, Mike, on the Broncos laying 7 against the Packers this week, but you liked what you saw from Bo Nix in week 1 of the preseason that did trigger a bet for you. What you got?
Yeah, I can't believe I bet this. But look,
you've been one of the kings of like the Bo Nix haters club, I feel like.
I was driving the bus. I wasn't even on it. I was driving the bus when they drafted him at number 12 overall. And now I'm driving the Bo Nix Rookie of the Year bus. I bet him at 22-1 when I was in Vegas last weekend. We've seen the money drop significantly on him. He's down to 14-1. Shop around. You can find as high as 18-1 out there in this market. Look. He's going to play 17 games. That, first off, is very important here. You're going to have a starter from day one. Sean Payton has really staked his reputation in Bo Nix and what he can do. And to me, the big difference here is what we saw from a scheme perspective in that preseason game. It kind of looked like the Oregon offense out there. What Sean Payton was able to do with quick reads, with scheming guys open, was a huge, huge eye-opener for me. I didn't think they'd be able to do that. And then you kind of look at the talent and you're like, wait a second. You got Cortland Sutton. You got Mims coming back from injury. You've got Troy Franklin, who's going to play the slot and literally is the adopted brother of Bo Nix. So you know there's a connection there as well. They're going to be down in a bunch of games. You got two decent running backs. He could put a bunch of stats up, and they don't have to worry about winning at all. Caleb Williams on the Bears, they got to worry about winning. They're going to run the football sometimes because they need to make sure that they win football games. So Bo Nix, I'm willing to take a shot at because we're going to get 17 games and the price is right, especially when it's 22-1. I'd still play it if you can find that 16-18 range. 14 is the absolute lowest I'd be interested in Bo Nix at Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think the other thing that you didn't – I mean, you said everything really well, but I think Sean Payton's so invested in Bo Nix, mm-hmm. he's going to make them do really well. Look, here's the thing about the Broncos that's fascinating. They've played the Chiefs and the Raiders 25 times. They're 1-24 in those games. They've only beaten the Raiders. They've only beaten the Chiefs. The Raiders have dominated them. And so, to me, if they can get that turned around – a little bit where they can beat the Raiders, they have a chance to hit their over total.
Yeah, the over 5.5, I don't think is a bad look. I'm really down on the Los Angeles Chargers. So I have an over ticket on the Raiders at 6.5. I'm considering throwing one in the Broncos here at 5.5. I think the Chargers will be worst team in that division. Real quick, I know we only have a minute. Love me the Dalton Kincaid over 750.5 passing yards. You're losing 1,900 passing yards in that Buffalo Bills offense. Kincaid has the most trust with Josh Allen here first year. Last year, he got 91 targets, put up 650 yards. He should get 120, 130 targets. If that happens, it's going to be closer to 900 yards. So Kincaid over 750.5.
I love that you were able to give that bet out and expect me to follow up on that next week when you're on the program. I want more details. So good, Mike Somich, as always. Thank you. And thank you for the Saratoga pick as well.
Great
get
job.
That in there, everybody.
Marcells hasn't bit yet. I haven't heard back. I'll let you know, Mike.
I want him to claim him. I hope he claims him. Let's go.
Mike Somich, everybody. VSiN host of The Handle every Saturday and Sunday, noon to 3 Eastern, and hanging out with us each and every Thursday. We're going to hit the break. When we come back, we got a storm warning. Don't go anywhere.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
All right, Stormy, this is my favorite segment of the week, the Storm Warnings. And last week we started off by saying, you know, everybody calm down. Don't overreact to what we saw at the quarterback play. But you have done an extensive job of studying these quarterbacks. You've seen a lot of college games. Without any overreaction, what is your opinion of these young quarterbacks as you take charge and looking to bet games this season?
Yeah, Michael, I love that segment that they do, that the Follow the Money guys do. I don't want to overreact, but I think this rookie class looks really good at the quarterback position. Yeah. I do feel so much for J.J. McCarthy with his opportunity this year getting cut short with the torn meniscus. But these guys, Michael, and you tell me if you agree, you think about how much went into this year. Like, this was the draft class for quarterbacks that everybody had been waiting for. And yes, I kind of get the vibes that this is going to be similar to the 2020 class that, hey, you might not be the biggest Tua Tagovailoa fan, but you look at that group of guys when they came out, all of them got second contracts. I think that could be the way of the world for this batch we have here. Caleb Williams looks like we're going to have competent quarterback play for the Chicago Bears in the first time in what feels like forever. The way that Jaden Daniels is going to step in the coaching staff with the Commanders feels like it's something to look forward to. You look at Bo Nix, who we just talked about at length with Mike Somich on the program, and your comments on the relationship with Sean Payton and how badly Sean Payton wants this thing to work. He's going to set this kid up for success. This batch of guys, I think, is one to watch and one we could be excited about.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I think you're right. And I think that, you know, the only one there's a little doubt of early on is Drake May, and it's hard to judge after just three plays. So I think it's a really promising start. It's funny, Stormy, you know, because when I was at Vegas, when we were doing the draft out there, everybody, oh, there's not going to be six quarterbacks. There's no way it's four. You know, history says it's four. It's always four. And look, there might be six guys that end up being really good players in the league.
Yeah.
Partly because I think, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I was just saying they all ended up in the top 12, let alone just being drafted in the first round. But finish your thought.
And, well, Spencer Rattler's, you know, he's having a great camp. I mean, if Derek Carr stops short, Spencer Rattler's able to take his job. All right, let's go into college football. I mean, last year we saw the committee select putting Liberty in the Orange Bowl, which we knew was a disaster. The betting market knew it was a disaster. You and I both screamed to the selection committee to put somebody who handicaps games on. Let me ask you this question. You're warning the committee about going down the same road. What are you going to say to them?
Yeah, Michael, I think that you teed that up nicely because yesterday at the end of the show, this is kind of what got the wheels turning for me. We were playing Why Not Wednesday like we always do on a Wednesday. And I said, could you say why not to Liberty making the college football playoff this year? We both were adamant about saying no. And I feel like I need to continue to push this forward and remind the selection committee of what happened last year, specifically with Liberty in the Fiesta Bowl, as you referenced. They lost that game horribly to Oregon, 45-6. And this was a Liberty team that, like they have this year, had the easiest schedule in all of college football. And it's not like they were skating by, right? They were largely dominant in those games. Their average margin of victory was around 20 points per game. Their offense averaged 38.5 points per game last season. But the teams with which they played were all terrible. And the first time they had to play an actual good team in a big game, they got embarrassed. And the selection committee, for me, should, and I believe genuinely will, take strength of schedule into account much more. So if you are looking at these group of five teams to make the college football playoff, don't just automatically look for one that has a cupcake schedule that they can run through. Look at a Boise State who does have some tough opponents on that schedule. Look at a Memphis. Look at a Texas State who we talked about earlier this week. Because even if they do have a loss or so, they win that conference championship, they're going to be given the benefit of the doubt a little bit more. And the dissenters of this thought process with me say, well, the selection committee should actually be learning from Florida State and not allowing an undefeated conference champion to be in the top four. For me, that's apples and oranges, especially considering, Michael, I still firmly believe the committee made the right decision last year not putting Florida State in that game. I think that they're going to learn their lesson from Liberty, that they're going to give that opportunity to a group of five team that is in a more deserving position given the strength of schedule that they played. So Liberty, to me, is a St. Jude's bet. I would not do it. Their strength of schedule is literally 134 of 134.
Yeah, I mean, look, everything about college football is level of comp, whether you're evaluating pro players to come to college or whether you're evaluating teams. I mean, one team might look good, you know, against Indiana, but when they play Ohio State, they don't look as good. So if you don't weigh that into the decision making, and, you know, nobody, we all want to watch the games, really, we do, but we don't want to watch bad games. And so I think you're dead on. I love that. I love this take. I love this storm warning. All right, let's shift to a favorite sub. One of my favorite movies of all time, and it was made well before you were born, is called All the President's Men. It was based on a book about the Nixon administration and Watergate. And in the movie, they always say, well, that's a non-denial denial.
Yeah.
And so that's one of the favorite quotes. Another non-denial denial. And so Brandon Ayuk, all we seem to have is a bunch of non-denial denials or non-update updates. Yes. Give us your take on that.
It's driving me nuts. As a 49er fan at this point, I'm like, walk or stay. Just get me out of this freaking Twilight Zone, Groundhog Day situation that we're in with these non-update updates. Every day it's something different. And this has been all off-season long. Like, it started days after the Super Bowl with his girlfriend on social media saying that maybe he's not going to be back this year. Of course, John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan say the opposite, even at the draft when they draft Ricky Pearsall. Then you got the TikTok with the Jaden Daniels conversation. They don't want me back. John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan say, well, yes, we do. Ayuk then requests a trade, and we have all of these offers out, including from the New England Patriots, who offer this guy $32 million. And he says, no, I don't want that. The Cleveland Browns have an offer on the table. The Steelers have an offer on the table, which now the reports are that the Steelers have a deal in place. All it's going to take is a phone call. But of course, the phone call is not happening because, according to Mike Garofolo, they have one more hurdle the 49ers need to overcome to see if they can land Brandon Ayuk, because clearly Brandon Ayuk wants to be a 49er. I'm just sick of the saga. I'm sick of the back and forth. I'm sick of the talking and the social media this and the social media that, and going through other people to disseminate your message as well. Just wake me up when the deal is over. I'm tired of it.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, you know who would echo all your comments here? Kyle Shanahan.
I'm sure. He's sick of it too.
He's sick of listening to Trent Williams. He said, you know, Robert Saleh can say it's no big deal, but every day you got to answer to Hassan Riddick. It's a pain in the ass. It really is. And so you just get tired of it. And at some point, when does IU jump into the pool? Either you want to play or you don't want to play. Like, I think to me, after this weekend, he either has to decide what he wants to do, because this can't continue to linger. Same thing with Ja'Marr Chase, who's now not even in the building. So that's got to happen. Trent Williams, that's got all these deals that people, we're getting to the point, we're 2 weeks away. Speaking of 2 weeks away.
Real quickly, Michael, before we move on, I just want to follow that up with, and that's a concern for on the field play as well. We've talked about it a lot with these guys who are dealing with contract negotiations. They're not in the shape that they need to be, and they're not as game ready as they should be. That can impact performance. That can impact injuries. Like, a lot of those things I'm thinking about. But again, just wake me up for the news.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of 2 weeks away, we're 10 days away from college football, week zero. Why we call it week zero, I have no idea. Is there something wrong with week one? Why can't we start with week one? Anyway, that's a whole other subject. But what warning do you have for bettors that plan on wagering next Saturday's slate?
You know, and it's funny you say that, Michael. You know, last week I was in Bristol for our ESPN college football seminar gearing up for the season. And we had a guest, one of which was the NCAA president, kind of talking about the season. And he even said week zero, like, why? Why are we doing this? But neither here nor there, to your point. We are all extremely excited to bet college football, right? Like, to your point, we are days away. Week zero is going to be here before you know it. It's a four-game slate led by Florida State against Georgia Tech. People are already planning their bets out. We've seen money come in from the 13. It's down to 11.5. Ooh, we're all feeling good. Now, listen, I understand we're excited. I understand we want to bet everything that is in front of us because we have meaningful football on our television screens for the first time in what feels like eternity. That's fine. But if that day does not go well for you, let's say your opening bet doesn't work out. You go to Montana State at New Mexico. Things still aren't clicking. SMU in Nevada. Whatever you do, do not chase on the 9 p.m. Pacific time, late night, Delaware State at Hawaii game, okay? I know you want to be profitable after the opening week. We're all excited. We're ready for college football. Don't do it, okay? Manage that bankroll. Have some strength. There's going to be great games coming up in week one. Save what you got. Just go out, cut your losses. Do not chase on Delaware State at Hawaii. I beg you.
Please don't. And don't chase ever. There's always another game coming. You know, you just don't, you know, that they, I think what happens in this betting market is you want to tally your sheet up at the end of the day and have a positive when, to me, trust the process. Tally your sheet up at the end of the year.
Yes, I know you're going to be mad through three games that you're not profitable. Don't just go and try to double down and do what you can on this game. It's not worth it for all that is holy. No. All right, we're going to hit the break. Fun storm warning. Appreciate you, Michael. We're going to hit the break when we come back. Resetting hour two of the Lombardi Line. We got injury updates. We got contract updates. The NFL is here, baby.